Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
What does a walking pile of poop, rogue angels, and Jackie's birthday all have in common? This week's episode, of course, because we are covering Kevin Smith's Dogma to celebrate Jackie's birthday. Welcome to the No More Late Fees podcast. I'm Danielle.
And I'm Jackie. And we're just two best friends and ex-Blockbuster employees rewatching some of the best and worst movies from the late 90s and early 2000s. This week, we are celebrating my birthday with the 1999 Kevin Smith comedy Dogma. And I'm wearing my Moo Bitch Get Out the Way shirt to celebrate. Yay!
I love that you made that.
Thank you.
If you want that shirt, tell Jackie. Maybe she'll make it for you.
Maybe, if you're lucky.
Maybe, if you're lucky.
Or maybe I'll upload it to Redbubble.
Yes. If we get enough responses, we will add it to our merch store.
Yes. But before we dive into this episode, I have long been waiting to do, let's get into some housekeeping. I said it wrong. I was too excited.
Your excited voice was very monotone in comparison to when we sing it. But I think it worked. I felt like we were in sync on that one.
I think so too. So if you love this podcast and this crazy shit that happens and you want to support us, here are a few ways that you can.
Reviews. I mean, we ask all the time, but we would love to hear your feedback on the show and just give us compliments, please. And thank you. Even if it's just one line, I really like the show. It's so easy, I swear. Especially on Apple, because it helps us get more listeners. So please take the time and write us a review if you haven't.
And if you like what you hear and want to buy us a virtual cup of coffee or a birthday coffee for your girl.
Yes, everybody who's listening to this episode, head to our Ko-fi, which she'll give you the link. But give this girl some coffee. She runs on it. I don't, but she does.
I do love my coffee. -fi.com/nomorelatefees.
And as we already mentioned, if you want to see some of the fun sayings that we say on this podcast and you want to wear it on your chest, head to nomorelatefees.redbubble.com and check out our merch.
We just put up a whole bunch of All I Want to Do shirts. So if that movie speaks to your soul, head on over to our Redbubble store and check out our designs.
Right. If you want to have up your Ziggy with a Wawa brush on your chest, we got it. We've got you covered. Oh,
let's
man.
Get into it.
Yes, let's get into Dogma.
So, two fallen angels who were ejected from paradise find themselves banned to Wisconsin. They are now headed for New Jersey because they have found a loophole that can get them back into heaven. The only catch is that it will destroy humanity. Just a small side note on that plan.
Just a minor symptom.
And they give zero fucks.
No, they don't care.
So a group bands together to stop them. It stars Ben Affleck, Matt Damon, Linda, Selma Hayek, Jason Lee, Jason Mewes, Alan Rickman, and Chris Rock. It was written and directed by my favorite, Kevin Smith. And you can watch it on the Internet Archive, or as I did, I dusted off that DVD that's signed by Kevin Smith. And I popped it into my Blu-ray player And it was such a treat to try and figure out how to use a remote control that's not designed for DVDs anymore.
What do you mean?
Like every time, because it just uses my TV remote, but then I would push play pause on my TV and they're like, nope, not that button. Hit the big button in the middle and then you can pause. And I'm like, why technology?
I don't know. I wish they would just give me a universal remote, like in the movie Click. Or
I was just going to say Click. But before we start this train, I mean, it's already off the tracks, but that's okay. Let's get into our ratings rewind.
So you guys know the drill. Before we get into the movie, we will reveal the rating our Y2K versions of ourselves would give. Then at the end, we'll see if our current selves agree with our initial ratings. Our scale consists of would buy it again.
The best, would play on repeat.
5-day rental.
Would watch again.
2-day rental.
Okay, but nothing to write home about.
And same day rental.
That's some Golgothan sized trash.
It's a would buy for me. I think I bought it on VHS, and all my VHSs I got rid of, so, and I just never bought it on DVD.
And now,
but I did buy it. It was a would buy for me. I don't even know why I asked, but I will. Jackie, what's your Y2K rating?
I have bought this movie no less than 3 separate times on DVD.
You gotta say it.
Would buy it. 100%. I was reflecting on, so when I first saw this movie in the theater, obviously I saw some of the hype around it, like being protested by the church and all of that. But this was the very first movie where, as the credits rolled, I just sat there and I was just like, this is a masterpiece. Like, I was so in awe of what I just watched. And so I was reflecting on why did it give me that feeling? And I think it's because up until that point, it came out in 99. So I was either a junior or senior in high school. And so, as you're growing up, you kind of do what you're told or you do what you know. And so not that my family went to church all that often, but I was baptized Catholic. When I was younger, I had gone to the Wednesday night church group stuff where the nun, this is an odd Jackie fact. For a while, nuns would come and pick us up from my aunt's house on Wednesday nights and drive a considerable distance, I feel, to the church. And then we would all hang out and like make napkin holders that say I love Jesus and learn about the Ark of the Covenant.
Interesting.
That's my church experience. But as you grow up, you kind of just do what you know or do what your parents have always done. You know, your world is small. And so this was the first time that I felt like, not even just in a movie, just in life, I was like, oh, you can question things. You don't have to do only what you've known to do. You can ask the questions. You can experience different things and figure things out for yourself and come to your own conclusion, which is the moral of this story, is like, it's said in the movie, it doesn't matter what your faith is, just that you have faith, because no religion has gotten it right, essentially. Yeah. And so that was just a huge takeaway. And that's kind of how I've led my life, is just always asking the questions, always learning new things, always trying to see something else from someone else's perspective and learning about other cultures and everything. So I think that's why this movie is so special to me, because it just taught me to ask questions and figure things out on my own and not just go with what people tell you to do. So that is why Dogma is special to me, my dissertation. Tell us about the box office.
Oh, boy. Okay. So the movie had a budget of $10 million, and it made $44 million. This is the fourth film in Kevin Smith's intricately interconnected View Askewniverse series, the others being Clerks, Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, Clerks 2, Jay and Silent Bob Reboot, and Clerks 2 that came out in 2022. But this movie had a shit ton of controversy because Jesus and the church, they were mad, girl. They had their Big robes. Mad. Their robes were in all sorts of issues. They were like, what the hell? So they were boycotting this movie.
They were. And Kevin Smith joined one of the boycotts because, of course, he did.
Yeah, so, they were picketing, I think, right?
And he was... And he got interviewed. So he gave the name of his friend Brian Johnson. If you listen to Tell Him Steve Dave or watch Comic Book Men, you'll know who that is. And then he, in the interview, he's like, yeah, I'm often mistaken for that director. Just laying it on really thick. It's one of my favorite things that he has ever done. It's just so poetic.
I think I have to ask, is Kevin Smith the first director troll? Because if we've done two other movies with him and he's literally done some sort of trolling each time.
Yeah, because I mean, he was very big into message boards and stuff in the early days. And I'm sure he'd like just go in and fuck with people, you know, like. We see a little bit of he writes about it a little bit in Clerks 2 where like Jay's arguing with trolls. So I feel like those are probably real things he has said in message groups. If Kevin I would Smith have to take a guess. Like us. Live for the chaos and the drama.
So due to the controversy, Disney was having doubts about releasing the film, at which point Miramax's douchebag, we just call him douchebag at this point, and I'm just going to say his name once and not again. You'll know I'm talking about him when I say douchebag. Harvey Weinstein personally bought the distribution rights for the film and was released by Lionsgate instead so that it wasn't going to cause a conflict. But now fast forward to today, and this is why we cannot stream this movie. On countless occasions, Kevin Smith has gone on the record saying that he's worked on trying to like get it from the clutches. Yeah, of this sick man.
Yep.
Without any success so far. So hopefully we pray to Jesus that he releases Dogma.
Himself.
William Donahue. I love this story. Of the Catholic League lambasted the film and publicly protested against it for months without actually seeing it.
Yep.
When his office called View Askew and requested a special screening so he could speak about it intelligently, quotes, Kevin Smith responded, so what has he been doing for the past 6 months?
It doesn't even shock me a little bit that we just go and protest without knowing what we're protesting.
Protesting Catholic League, insane. Yeah. Just didn't make any sense.
I thought it was interesting that Kevin Smith actually pursued Robert Rodriguez to direct the movie. And luckily, Robert Rodriguez is like, no, this is so personal to you. Like, the only one that can direct this and do it justice is you. So yeah. I'm glad he got that pushback because, like, it's so personal to him. And knowing he wrote it before he wrote Clerks. And he just recognized, like, he didn't have the budget to shoot something on the level and do it justice. Right. So that's why he made Clerks first. Like, I'm very glad that he directed it.
I just – also, he's a Catholic, so I just find it hilarious that the Catholics are so mad about it. Because when I look at the movie, okay, that there's cursing, but there's no tits in this movie, surprisingly. There is a cleavage and dancing.
There's a Ken crotch.
There's a Kendall
crotch.
Yes, a Ken crotch. So as we're saying the things, I'm like, maybe it is a little offensive, but there wasn't anything.
I'm sorry. The Bible has killing in it.
Right.
It has genocide. It has and all that sex. Shit. And sex. Like, aside from the cursing, he's not putting out anything that hasn't been talked about in the Bible before.
It was just interesting the way that he built the story was taking some of these characters and a little bit of lore and putting it in like a real day situation. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it made more people curious about Christianity, about Catholicism than not, you know, because, you know, people wanted to know where did this stuff come from. So I don't know. They need to relax.
So let's talk a little bit about the casting. Obviously we have the consistent players, the people that are his friends that show up in every movie, Matt Damon, Ben Affleck. Actually, I don't know.
This is the first time Matt Damon showed up in one of the movies.
Yeah, Ben Affleck was in Chasing Amy. So this was the first time for Matt Damon. And we were just talking about Matt Damon and Ben Affleck's Dunkin' Donuts commercial and how we want to...
forgot about this movie.
Same, because I don't think of it as just like obviously it's a comedy, but not like a buddy comedy like we were talking about. But I mean, the scenes with them, and I'm sure we'll get into it more, but the scenes with them together just bantering are so fucking enjoyable.
Yeah. But you know it's them.
Yes. Absolutely. So Kevin Smith and his producer, Scott Moser, heard that Alan Rickman was a fan of Chasing Amy, so they asked him to play the Metatron. He did read the script, and he came back with only two questions. Would they stay faithful to the script, and were the wings real or CGI? And so he signed on. Just the amount of talent in this movie is just, whether you like them as people or not, like, we have some really, really talented actors and actresses in this movie. Bethany's role aside.
Okay. What is the deal? Because when we did Men in Black and Linda, is it Florentino?
Sorry, Fiorentino, I think.
But Barry, the director of that movie, had said not great things to say about her. But Kevin had not great things to say about her. But after he had his heart attack, she actually reached out to him and he apologized to her and apologized, I think, publicly about saying things about her. So I just wonder if like she is like this horrible person or is she misunderstood?
I think so. Kevin Smith wrote a book, and now I can't remember the name of it. And they were like short essays, and he blasted a shit ton of people in those books. Like, he blasted Reese Witherspoon. I'm pretty sure there was a chapter on Linda Fiorentino. And I think he just realized like it was kind of like a childish thing to do. Yeah. Like, he was young. He was learning. Like, when he made Clerks, he was still in film school. Like, so he started this at a very young age. And I think just growing up after being in the system and stuff, he's had time to reflect on like things he may have done in the past. And maybe she is difficult to work with, but he didn't have to like put her on blast about it, you know?
Yeah. I think not being in Hollywood, you know, yes, he's in Hollywood to an extent, but when he makes these movies, it's so not Hollywood.
Yeah.
And so I think he's had a hard time adjusting to the Hollywood life per se and the personas of people and not understanding maybe even especially for women how they move and they do things in said system, things that he probably wouldn't even have to think about on his end. Not to say that some of these people weren't bitches or assholes, but who knows how they got there. The system is corrupt. We've talked about that. So I think in a lot of ways he was a little sensitive about things because he took them personally, not understanding that this is how people play the game kind of situation.
Right.
So I'm glad that he's been able to reflect and kind of mend fences. You know, we talked about him mending fences with Ben Affleck after their fallout. And if you want to hear more about that, you can go check out, I believe we did that on our Jay and Silent Bob episode. Clerks? Or was it?
Maybe.
Was it Clerks?
No. One of them episodes.
Oh, it's the episode where I went through I feel like I went through a whole thing about
J-Lo,
Ben Affleck, and Jennifer Garner. It was Daredevil.
Yep. That's how our ADHD brain gets to our ADHD brain gets to things is the back door.
So yeah, if you want to hear a crazy timeline of me busting through the J-Lo and Jennifer Garner and Ben Affleck love timeline, as well as the beef between Jennifer Garner and Kevin Smith and the beef between Kevin Smith and Ben Affleck, check out our Daredevil episode and our trailer full of gems. I also think it's fun that he plays that Matt Damon plays Loki in this movie, and then he makes a, because we talked about this in our Eurotroop episode, like how he just makes these crazy cameos. He made a cameo in the Loki Marvel movie. No, in
Thor Ragnarok.
Right. And I think he did it again in Thor Love and Thunder. I think he was in that one too. And he plays Loki in that. So I thought that was like kind of cute.
I love that he's down for anything. Like, I'm making fun of himself. It seems he doesn't mind, like, even kind of making a fool, you know. And the smallest part doesn't matter. If it's fun, it seems like he's willing to play it. Jumping back to Alan Rickman for a second, Jason Mewes had the entire script memorized before rehearsals even started. And when he was asked why, it was because he didn't want to upset or anger Alan Rickman, because Kevin Smith had told him that you need to bring your A game because Alan Rickman is on this set. So I really love that Jason Mewes, and I am so impressed, because at the time, Jason Mewes was struggling with his drug addiction. And even in some scenes, he was nodding because he was high. And so the fact that, like,
this is his best performance.
Yeah, like, you're so high on drugs, you're nodding out in the middle of filming scenes, but you still had the wherewithal to be able to memorize the entire script. Like, that's impressive, because we've been doing this podcast for almost 3 years, still really don't have the opening memorized.
Gun to the head, couldn't do it. Could not do it.
So, testament to what a great actor Jason Mewes is and his recall skills and memory skills. So,
hello. Yeah, that's crazy. That's a lot to memorize.
Yeah.
The one thing in the casting that made me very furious was to learn that the role of Bethany was originally supposed to, or Kevin Smith's first choice with Gillian Anderson. One of my top five white lady crushes.
She is so underrated, and she is so good in everything that she is in. Like, Sex Education.
That woman should have Oscars, Emmys, she should. Everything. She's so good. And I love that that her British accent and American accent just kind of go back and forth. Like, it just comes. She just is so chill. She's the best. I love her. To have her in that movie, I would have died.
Yeah. And then he also considered having, and he regrets not casting Janine Garofalo in the Bethany role, and said she's cast as the friend. I'm like, even that would have been light years ahead of what we got in the Bethany role. Right. It was just so flat. It was just, you're literally meeting apostles, the Metatron, muses. No one has dicks or vaginas. And you're just like, okay, I guess I'll go to New Jersey with the Prophets. Like, it's just so one note.
I think it would have even been really cool if Jesus's family line would have been a Jewish woman. Like,
it makes sense.
Yeah. Also, question, who was a worse actor in this movie? Was it Linda or Chris Rock?
Chris Rock was being Chris Rock. Like, on stage, stand-up Chris Rock. He was just being loud.
It hurt my soul to rewatch this. I started fast-forwarding through his life. I was like, put me in, coach. I'm not an actor, but I just feel like I can do a degree or so better than this man. This is bad.
He was phoning it in.
Chris Rock is who white people feel comfortable with to have a black part. You could have gotten so many other people to play this. Funnier at that.
And I'm sure it was partly like playing the political Hollywood game to get this movie made, you know? But no,
they liked him. I think at the time he was hot shit. Let's not lie. But he just was horrible.
Well, what you were saying is like we needed someone in the role and needed to be a black person because there's talk about removing any mention of black people in the Bible at all. So we needed, in Hollywood terms, someone who is palatable to the mass audiences, which is such a disservice because it should be the best person for the role gets the role. But
But there's so many other people. Like, even Dave Chappelle would have been better.
It's true.
Or Orlando Jones. Not as big as a name, but he would have been hilarious.
Oh, man. Orlando Jones and Evolution. Top tier comedy.
Yeah. So, yeah. Who else could we have gotten? Holly Hunter?
Yep.
For God? Alanis Morissette. That always throws me off.
I think it's perfect. Like, you're not expecting it, but somehow it makes sense.
Yeah. I was just like, go ahead and just sing a few riffs of You Ought to Know real quick. Real quick.
And, like, at the end where, like, God's voice is what kills Bartleby. Spoilers if you haven't seen Dogma. I mean, she got that giant mouth and we know she got the pipe. So, like, it made sense. I was on board for Alanis as God.
Yeah, and I love her gold costume at the end.
Oh, it's so pretty.
We skipped through quite a bit, but...
And that's our Dogma episode.
The end.
Woohoo! So we start out, there are a couple of title cards that kind of explain what Dogma is, and he speaks to the fact that there is pushback about this movie, and he also mentions something about the platypus is proof that God has a sense of humor, and then the next title card's kind of poking fun at that, like, we do not mean to insult the platypus, a wonderful creature on this earth type thing. So the first scene, we're in Ashbury Park, New Jersey, on the boardwalk. There's an old man just taking in the sights, fresh sea air, gazing out over the ocean. And these three, I refer to them as the hockey triplets. Uh-huh. I'm pretty sure that there's another name for them, but they kind of sneak up behind him. And the only thing that bugs me about this movie is the fact that every time they show up, it's like a very, like, cheesy fly buzzing sound effect that when they show up, it plays.
Yeah.
It's nice to my ears.
I think it's supposed to, like, represent, I mean, because when you think about decaying bodies and death, yeah. I get it, but yes, it does make me itch.
And it was also just very heavy-handed. Like, we got who they are and who they were serving without any of that. So they beat up this old man, and then we switch to Red Bank, New Jersey. There is an anchor talking about a rededication ceremony because the Catholic Church needs a rebrand. And so we're going to Catholicism. Wow. Not wrong at all.
They needed it.
And so it's Cardinal Glick. Well, the anchor, did you recognize the news anchor or did you read it in the notes?
Oh, yeah. It was the guy from Clerks. It starts with a D.
Dante. Yeah. Brian O'Halloran, who has like the weirdest accent ever. I'm like, that's not any one accent. It's a little bit British, but a little bit French almost. I don't know. It's like
when I had fun with it. I didn't recognize it. I didn't recognize him or realize it was him in the and when I watched the first time.
And so we see Cardinal Glick, played by George Carlin, and fantastic casting in the Cardinal Glick role. He nailed it. And in if you've ever listened to George Carlin stuff, he's always been very critical of the Catholic Church. So it seems like a no-brainer for him to play this cardinal in this satirical role, trying to rebrand.
I love that, like, his one condition of, like, being in the movie was that he had to still wear his wedding ring because his wife had just passed. So I was like, oh, that's heartbreaking. I don't think anyone ever really even noticed he was wearing a ring. But someone, I think on Reddit, said it wouldn't have made a difference either way because cardinals can wear a ring. It would have just looked maybe a little bit more gaudy.
Well, he wore a Band-Aid to cover it up. Right. But they did say, like, the Pope gifts cardinals rings. Look at me with all of the Catholicism knowledge, much like our Eurotrip episode. Thanks, Angels and Demons. Let's see how many times I can reference Angels and Demons in this episode. So we are unveiled, or Cardinal Glick unveils the Buddy Christ, which still to this day, the number one selling item if you go to Jay and Silent Bob's secret stash in Red Bank, New Jersey. He has become a symbol along with Mubi, which if you're watching my video, right here is my Mubi Funko Pop that I purchased at the Mubi pop-up with Danielle. So Buddy Christ and Mubi, the two kind of mascots of the Viewisk universe. So
I didn't realize that this was the first movie that Mubi was in.
Yep.
I thought in my head that Mubi's was in Clerks 2 first or Jay and Silent Bob. I think I was just getting the dates of everything mixed up. So that confused me. But I was like, oh, it was such a small thing in this movie, except for the executive thing. But I was like, oh, that's where it came first. So I had to go think for a little bit. It really made, I had to press pause and really think it through.
Now we are in the airport in Wisconsin. Is it located? No. What?
Are they in the airport first?
Yeah. That's where we meet them, is in the airport. And during shooting of this scene, Ben Affleck had invited Gwyneth Paltrow to set, and she's sitting, she's not in any scenes, but she's sitting in a chair a couple of seats down from what is in frame. So that's a little tidbit for ya.
I'm trying to figure out if they were dating by then. I don't, because it says that she came on set as a friend, and so now you know I'm going to have to go look up a timeline on their relationship.
So Loki, who is the one that likes to watch people?
Humanity. It's definitely Bartleby because that was his angel. So there's different factions of the angels, I guess. And he was a watcher. So he's watching humanity. Right. And while Loki is not, he's about business.
Well, he is like Kevin toys with kind of the angels and like what their characteristics were in the Bible versus what is on screen. And so he brought some of that trickster god from Greek mythology into this character of Loki. And so we see Loki talking to a nun and equating Catholicism with the walrus and the carpenter from The Looking Glass by Lewis Carroll, and making all of these allegories. And somehow he convinces her to leave the nunnery and like go off on her own and keep all the money she's been raising to buy herself a nice outfit and stuff. And the reason why they're at the airport hanging out is because Bartleby, like you said, Danielle, likes to watch humanity, and it's humanity at its finest. Everyone is kind of excited to see one another. Obviously, this is pre-9/11, so you're allowed to wait at the gate and wait for your loved one to come off the plane, which gates are so goddamn crowded. I can't imagine any more people than the people that are getting on the airplane being crowded around a gate. That's just my side rant. So Bartleby is saying like he loves when people get off the plane and like run into each other's arms, and it like all the other bullshit like doesn't matter for a few minutes. They're just so excited to see each other, even though like that lady was cheating on him while she was out of town, blah, blah, blah. Like it's just humanity at its finest at the airport. And then when Bartleby goes and sits down next to Loki, he shows him that he was mailed an article about the rededication of the church in New Jersey. And he's like, we can go home. Rededication means anyone who walks through those arches, all of their sins are forgiven. And he's like, that's what we need. We walk through those arches, all of our sins are forgiven. We become human. We get to go home. And so now that is their plan. They have one objective: get to the arches, go home to heaven. However, in that great and awesome plan for them, enters dogma, which is the concept that anything that is decreed in church, God will hold true in heaven. And so because the church has made this rule, God has to uphold this rule, therefore showing that God is fallible, because he has said that Bartleby and Loki will never be allowed to return, thus negating all existence. So, yay for them, boo for the rest of us.
So while the angels are doing their shenanigans, we meet Bethany at... She works at a Planned Parenthood. She's also very Catholic. She goes to, you know, mass, but she's also having a crisis of faith at the same time. And so you see her kind of like interacting in her day-to-day life, but she is called upon or scared shitless when Alan Rickman shows up in her house unannounced. Poof. He's in her bedroom. She's freaking the hell out. Honestly, I don't think she freaked out enough.
She just grabbed the fire extinguisher and put him out. Put the flames out.
I would have tried to strike him or whatever. I think she tries to throw something. But the way that he like engages with her is almost as if like she should know that he's an angel. And like, hello, why would I be here any other way?
Well, I think it was the fact that like she is a devout Catholic, goes to church all the time, yet she's never heard of the Metatron, which I'm assuming, I have not read the Bible, but I'm assuming he's in there to know about him.
I don't know if I know that name is like a highest
order of
like
angel.
I know it's like some sort of biblical or like religious name, but I don't know if it's in the Bible or not. I don't remember. I didn't learn it in Sunday school, I'll tell you that.
Essentially, so he is the voice of God. He speaks on God's behalf because God's voice is so powerful it would make any human's head explode.
Yeah, which I do believe that it says the voice of God in the Bible a few times. So, but I don't know if we like interpret it that it is a separate being that is the voice of God. So that was an interesting take, and maybe there's more lore to that we don't know about. But in order to like prove that he's not there to rape her, because that's her first concern, not that he magically popped in there.
Yeah,
trial, and then we see his Ken parts, and he then informs us that God did not give the angels any of their packages or pieces like we have here, which shows kind of his sense of humor, he says, because sex is hilarious.
Okay, so I found information on the Metatron. It says, although there is no mention of the Metatron in either testament of the Bible, mythical texts, apocalyptic texts, and apocryphal mythology all reference him.
Interesting.
So there's that.
Also, I think it's in sacred geometry, is one of them is called that too, the Metatron symbol. Yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So while Bethany is trying to defend herself to prove he is an angel, I guess, the best thing he could think of is to take her to a cantina with the snap of his fingers. And he doesn't even take her to like an authentic cantina. He takes her to the one around the corner from her house.
Angels will make a lot of money.
So they have a discussion about why he is visiting. She has to go to New Jersey, visit this church, stop a couple of angels from entering, thus negating all existence. Does he have to spell it out for her?
Right. It's just like crazy insanity. So he gives her very cryptic details that she's like, what the hell? And she wakes up from her sleep thinking it was all a dream. And that's where she goes to work. And she
wakes up like she thinks it's all a dream, but he has maracas at the, like, as he like disappears, and she wakes up and the maracas are underneath her pillow.
And you know, during the filming of that scene, Alan Rickman was like, could not stop shaking the maracas. Like, he was very obsessed with them. So thought that was cute. And so, like I said, she goes to work. When she's leaving, that's when she is introduced to Jay and Silent Bob. Of course, Jay is like already hitting on her, and he's like, you should give us sex for saving your life. Mm-hmm. And she's about to like still go about her business, but then he says something about profit, but he's not talking about being a prophet. He's talking about money profit.
Yeah, so they are originally from Red Bank, New Jersey. They moved to Illinois, where Bethany is, in the hopes of finding Shermer, Illinois, which is where all of the John Hughes movies are set, because in their mind, it's where they can sell the most drugs.
Oh.
Because there's no drug dealer in Shermer, Illinois, from what they can tell from the movies.
Also, they talked about how there were so many hot chicks in those movies.
Oh, that's true, too. That was a side benefit of making. And that's why he talks about we are going to make a profit because we're going to sell drugs.
I just don't understand how Silent Bob goes along with these things. Like, it seems like he has more logic than Jay does. So, anywho, I don't know how Bethany just hears that and she's like, you know what? I'm coming with you to Red Bank.
Maybe because she's having such a crisis of faith. She's probably stuck in a rut. We find out her fiance or husband left her because she found out she couldn't have children. So she's kind of just really stuck in this place. And so maybe she's looking for any reason to get out.
Yeah.
Even if it's with Jay and Silent Bob.
Yeah. And of course, as they're leaving, they're going on their road trip, their journey. I don't know why she lets Jay drive and he can't drive stick. So he messes up her car.
And so they're in the middle of nowhere. It's like they're almost like on a bridge with trees around them. And she's trying to figure out what to do. And she's kind of saying, I made a mistake. Like, I don't know why I thought this was a good idea. And she starts walking, and then she says something about just falling from the sky. And then we get Rufus.
Why does he fall while, well, I guess because he's undead. Like, why does he fall and everyone else, like, well, I guess everyone else is an angel.
Yes.
So, yeah.
You can tell because they wear hoodies to symbolize their halos.
Yes. They dress identical, except for, like, the colors, but they all have the same kind of uniform, which I did not notice at first, so.
And then because Rufus falls from the sky after Bethany says something about, like, maybe she says something about, like, good guys don't just fall from the sky.
Right.
Jay immediately says something about big titty women don't just fall from the sky. He had high hopes. It did not work.
It was smart of him to try. So at this, I mean, of course, Rufus is butt ass naked. And yep. So Silent Bob has to let him borrow his trench coat. And I think they end up hitchhiking because the next scene we see, when we see them together, they're at a
movies.
Yeah. Getting food.
So meanwhile, while all of this is happening, Loki and Bartleby are heading towards Red Bank, New Jersey. But Loki requests a stop at the movies headquarters on the way.
So they end up going to Chicago. Because I was confused at first because the bus says Chicago. I was like, I thought they're going to New Jersey, but I forgot he wanted to make the headquarters stop. Because yes. I was like, that's a mistake. That's a mistake. It says Chicago.
And that's how kind of later on they all end up converging on the same train. But there's a scene where Loki is purchasing a gun at a gun store. The person selling the guns is Jeff Anderson, who plays Randall in Clerks. So we get yet another little cameo. And then if you notice in this scene, Bartleby is kind of playing with a pocket knife as Loki's looking at all these guns and dialogue is being exchanged. And then you see Ben Affleck, like, recoil real fast and then, like, look at his finger because he cut himself with the knife during that scene. And I've always noticed that, like, doing research for this episode, I can, like, that confirmed in my mind, like, that bitch really cut himself. So I thought that was interesting.
Mitra, if you could describe our show in one word, what would it be?
Unrefined.
That's the name of our podcast, so that's perfect. I'm BJ, and that's Mitra, and we have a podcast called Unrefined. Why don't you tell the people what it's about, Mitra?
It's about paranormal, conspiracies, and just random silliness sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. Random silliness is what we do best. But for real, guys, we do like to talk about the paranormal, creepy, spooky things that go bump in the night. Plus, we like to get into some conspiracies every once in a while as well.
We have new episodes premiering every Monday and Wednesday and special Strange Stories on Friday.
You can get those episodes wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Catch us on Paranormal TV Fridays, 9 p.m. Eastern.
I think that just about sums it up. Do you think that that's the kind of promo that Danielle and Jackie wanted?
They get what they get.
That's true. You guys have fun with this.
So they head to Chicago. They go to the movies headquarters and they do like this whole song and dance. And Bartleby's kind of just in a corner watching Loki do his thing. He's calling out all of these very horrible human beings who are like on the board or in the C-suite, whatever, at movies, except for one person who's totally not a horrible person. And he goes on a shooting rampage and kills them all, pretty much.
The cadence of this scene, I love. At first, it's everyone in the boardroom just doing boardroom stuff. And movies is kind of a conglomeration of Disney and McDonald's-ish. Mm-hmm. Like, they talk about movies and soundtracks and TV shows and fast food chains and all of that stuff. And so Loki is whittling a little man out of an onion, which if you watch closely, he accidentally cuts the little onion man's head off while he's sitting down, but later it's back on. So continuity. I got you. And then it starts out with him saying that they're being judged because they're perpetuating idolatry, so worshiping a false god, the first commandment. And then he goes into all of the completely awful things. But like the way this is shot and set to the movie soundtrack, I just think it's like a beautifully put together scene, even though we're just killing a bunch of people.
Yeah, the good thing is that like he doesn't really show it.
No.
So I did like that it didn't have to be bloody for no reason per se. So while that's happening, on the other side, you have the gang of Jay and Silent Bob, Rufus, Bethany, and, oh, I said Jay and Silent Bob. So all four of those peeps. What ends up happening is that Rufus calls out Jay potentially for having some gay tendencies that he, or bisexual, who knows, he jacks off thinking about guys. So now Jay and Silent Bob disappear because they want to prove, or Jay wants to prove, that
he likes the women.
And this is where we find the muse, played by Selma Hayek, who is at a strip club, but she's not really stripping, she's just in satin bra and underwear. So here's my thing at this point. If you can't write for Black people, don't have Black people in your movies. I'm over it. I'm not even going to complain, because when I do see Black people in your movie, it's always some sort of, what's the word? Caricature. Stereotype. It's always a caricature or a stereotype. And it's always it's few and far in between when I see Black people and Kevin Smith. Same with Adam Sandler movies. Like, just don't do it. I can't. It takes me out of the movie. So we already have Chris Rock and his bullshit. So it's like, whatever. But then they get to this like fake strip club, and there's like a gang, literally a gang. And I want to say they're probably representing the Bloods. I don't even know if there are Bloods in Chicago, but. Or whatever. I don't know if that's where they're at. I don't know if they're in Chicago, but anywho, Illinois. And so they see the muse. You could see that the muse is making kind of like, there's some sort of psychic thing happening, because every time she kind of does this like wink thing, all the guys who are watching are giving away money. And this is when it clicks for Rufus that like, oh, that is serendipity, that is the muse. And at this point, I'm trying to think if she goes and talks to like Rufus, calls her out, and he's like, it's been so long, what are you doing down here? And that's when she comes and starts talking to them, and the gang of Black men are upset because she is not paying attention to them anymore. Mm-hmm. And they're ready to like start a fight. But when that happens, Azrael comes and pops in and throws everything off, I believe.
It's not Azrael. I'm trying to figure out when we first see Azrael, because I feel like we've missed him somewhere.
Well, yes, we did miss him. We see him sneaking into, we're introduced to Azrael, who has these little demon horns, and the three hockey guys report to him in some way. We see him get into or kill somebody. The hockey guys kill somebody so that he can get into their house, and he's turning the AC up way high, which tells us that he was probably in hell. And he is the puppet master behind why Loki and Bartleby get that letter to tell them about the Catholic Church. So he is up to everything, and he finds out that they had called on the last scion, which is Bethany, we find out. So we do get that scene with him being really mad at the three guys because they weren't able to kill the last scion and get her out of there. So now he's pulling up another demon thing to be able to go after them, and we end up seeing him later.
The Golgothan. Yeah. So just back to the conversation at movies earlier, this is when we find out, like through conversation, Bethany is the last. No, it's not during that. But anyway, Rufus does say that Jesus is black, which we all know to be fact, but the church doesn't want to admit that fact. So all of their pictures remain like Obi-Wan Kenobi, Jesus. So the Golgothan rises up out of the toilet. Everyone kind of bands together, the gang included, to defeat this shit demon. And Serendipity is about ready to throw a Molotov cocktail, but just Silent Bob just stands up and has like a Poobagon spray that he keeps on hand because Jay is always farting, apparently. And so it knocks strong odors out. And so that's how they end up defeating the shit demon, is by a little bit of poopery, if you will. So now they have added Serendipity to part of the Scooby gang, which we get our second John Hughes reference. It's not as obtuse as the one earlier, but she talks about how she is a muse. She inspires people. And so she's responsible for the 19 of the top 20 films of all time. She wasn't responsible for Home Alone, which was written by John Hughes. So that is my little fun fact.
Directed by Christopher Columbus.
Yes.
I think they do make reference to The Last Scion because Rufus has to tell Serendipity, and they find out that Bartleby and Loki are on the loose. So when he's updating her, we learn some more information. And yeah, so like you said, Silent Bob knocks out the shit goblin. I think in that point, the gang is killed.
Or knocked out at the very least.
By the shit goblin, whatever his name is. So yeah, not too happy about the representation that existed in this movie.
Yep. And then during the scene, we also get a discussion between Serendipity and Bethany, where Serendipity said, "God's a woman." Like, duh, isn't it obvious? So now we have that in our frame of mind that God is a woman.
Well, it's funny because Rufus still calls God he, even yes. after this is mentioned. And so do some of the other guys in the movie. Later on, they say that God is neither that or this or that. But I just thought that was interesting that only the female character refers to her as a woman.
Yes. And there is mention, along with Jesus is black, is that like... And Rufus was removed as the 13th apostle because he is black as well. Rufus also mentions that women are always portrayed as the harlot or the catalyst for what's going wrong in any sort of story. And so it's women are kind of portrayed as what am I trying to say? Not enemies, but like antagonists in the Bible. And so, yay, patriarchy.
This movie does pass the Bechdel test because there are plenty of conversations that are had between Bethany and Serendipity that don't necessarily involve a man, especially since we know God is a woman.
Yeah.
And I think this is when Azrael, why can't I say his name now?
Azrael?
Yes. Shows up.
Yeah, he meets up with Bartleby and Loki and tells them that they have to lay low, be incognito, because everyone's looking for him. He tips them off that Rufus, Serendipity, and they also have the Last Scion with them. And so now we get...
Which this part is key, because he has planted in their heads that essentially they're after them to kill the angels.
Yes.
Bethany at this point has no thoughts of harming the angels or killing them in any way. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of made them antagonistic, so that when they do run into Bethany and the team, that they're trying to physically hurt her.
Yes. And this starts Bartleby's wheels turning, because Bartleby has always been very sympathetic to you humans.
Right.
And now he's like, essentially, like, God has sent all of these people after me for no, right. like, I'm just serving my penance. I found a loophole and now like God is sending all these people after me. So he starts to form a chip on his shoulder about this whole situation. And he's like, well, fuck them humans. Like, yeah. why does God love them most when we serve him and y'all get to do whatever you want? Like, that's not fair. So that's when we see the shift in Bartleby.
Side note, I found out the dates that Gwyneth Paltrow and Ben Affleck were dating. So they were dating from 1997 to 2000. Now, this movie came out in 2001, did we say?
I thought we said 1999.
Oh, you're right. It is 1999. So this was when they were dating, but it's very weird that he said she was his.
Now we're all on the train. So Bethany, Rufus, Jane, Silent Bob, and Serendipity are all on the train heading to Red Bank, New Jersey. Unbeknownst to them, Loki and Bartleby are also on the train in the food car. Why can't I think of the dining car? That's what it's called. And so Rufus kind of falls asleep. I don't know where Serendipity is, because I feel like she would have noticed them too.
Where'd I don't know go? Where she... I don't. She just disappeared. Maybe she was in her own cart or something. I don't know. Because so, you're right, we don't see her in this scene.
Yeah. Yeah. So essentially, Rufus is asleep. Bethany and Jan and Silent Bob go to the dining car. They meet Loki and Bartleby, who now know to like lay low. They use pseudonyms. Yeah, Bethany is drinking and having a great time and hitting on Bartleby, and everything is good until Rufus wakes up and is kind of looking for them. And at the same time, Bethany is telling Bartleby their whole plan. She has to go and stop a couple of angels from going under the arch, thus negating all existence. And how do I even catch an angel? And all of this stuff. So Bartleby now knows he's talking to the last scion.
First of all, Bethany, didn't your mama teach you don't be telling your business to strangers?
She was drunk.
I know the movie has to move its plot, but girl, she was just out here spilling everything.
And she didn't have to tell them because Azrael had already told them. And as soon as Rufus walked in, they would have known who she was.
Right.
So that whole dialogue was wholly unnecessary because they would have inferenced everything anyway.
I have a big question for this scene. When shit hits the fan and he tries to like attack Bethany at this point, because we see Rufus walk into the train and he's like, what the hell? How is it that it's Silent Bob who is able to take out two angels? Is it because I don't think they can get drunk? Because we've already established that when Metatron was talking to us.
Or high, because Loki's pretending to get high with Jay.
Right. So how is it just Silent Bob is able to take both of them down? The man who has killed and done all of the plagues in the Bible is taken out by Silent Bob.
He just throws them from the train. He just grabs them. But the fact
that he could grab them and they don't fight him at all.
Or just like pop out your wings. Like, he can't hold you. Right. If there are wings in the way. That's me holding an angel if you needed to know.
Out of the whole movie, this was the thing that plagued my brain.
But we do get one of the few lines Silent Bob says, which is, no ticket. From Indiana Jones and The Last Crusade.
I think he says two lines in this movie.
So yeah, one is towards the end. Yeah.
So just how, why, when, where, who?
And Loki at this point, we're kind of getting a role reversal where Loki's like, maybe this isn't such a great idea. Like,
yeah,
Wisconsin's not the worst place to be.
But Bartleby has snapped at this point. He has snapped. I think he feels hurt. They got daddy issues. Let's call it what it is. They got daddy issues, which I find very interesting because if you've ever watched the show Lucifer, it's giving very similar vibes.
Well, at one point, Loki says, you sound like the Morning Star. You are waging war against God.
Which makes me also wonder when the Lucifer comic book came out, because you know that show was based off a comic book, and we know that Kevin Smith loves comic books. So I'm wondering if any of this lore actually ties into that a little bit as well, because that would be cool. Some of these character names probably are from there as well.
Yeah, definitely. So 1989 is when Lucifer appeared for the first time. Timeline fits. Yeah.
Is Lucifer connected? The Lucifer comic book and lore connected to Dogma? Riddle me this. Riddle me this.
Yeah. Hey, Danielle.
Yep.
You know how I'm always getting on to you about fidgeting while we're on the podcast?
Yeah.
Well, I found something that is going to change our lives. It is a product called Conquer Ring, and it is a ring that fits on your finger like this. And you can snap it and play with it while you are sitting and talking, and it's not distracting. It does have a nice little click.
Do they have different designs too?
It is highly customizable. You buy the ring itself. You can pop this piece out, and then you can purchase other designs. Some are spinners where a secret message will show up as you spin it. They come in circular designs, diamonds, hexagons, even this cute little wave design.
Ooh.
If you have a person in your life that fidgets, has ADHD, and you just need something that they can keep on them, fidget while they're working or doing schoolwork or podcasting, head to myconquering.com and put in the coupon code Jackie10 and you'll get 10% off your first order. I just love it. I've had it for a couple of weeks now and can't recommend it more.
Nice.
Check it out. Now we get the scene where they're kind of sitting like a lake or something. I don't know. They're somewhere. Metatron shows back up and they explain to Bethany that she's the last scion. There's 18 years unaccounted for of Jesus's life in the Bible. During that time, Mary and Joseph had brothers or had other children, and Bethany is a descendant of Jesus of by way of being a great, 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 great niece.
I want to get a shirt that's Jesus is an uncle, y'all.
Let's see.
Is this, don't they go to the church?
No, before that, they're still sitting around and talking. And this is when they find out that God is missing. He has his skee ball holidays where he'll just take a weekend and go skee balling. And he is not back yet. And no one knows where he is. He hasn't tried to communicate with anyone. And so they're getting worried because there's no one up in heaven right now.
Yeah, heaven is out of control. Again, this is a similar plot that happens in the Lucifer TV show. God leaves and everyone's trying to take control. So interesting.
But what they do say is like he has to be incapacitated in some form or fashion, because if he was killed on earth, he would just immediately return to heaven, no problem. So someone has done something to him to keep him in a state where he's not able to return to heaven.
Right. And they know it's not Lucifer or Morningstar.
Right.
So someone who knows the rules and has figured this all out. Yeah. Also, one thing to note is that throughout the whole movie, we're in the background. We keep seeing these news stories because remember, in the beginning of the movie, we saw that person get hit by the Teenage Mutant Ninja Hockey Stars. And so we keep getting stories about this John Doe who's in the hospital, and actually everybody's up in arms because the hospital decided to take said John Doe off life support. So had they just done that, the movie would be over. But
and the Catholic Church is actively raising money to combat removing him from life support. So really, it's like, well, that's God. So, no one's running heaven right now. You may want him to return.
Right.
And then, so the new plan is to just go and try and reason with the cardinal and request that he doesn't have the rededication ceremony. Because you can only do the rededication every 100 years. And that's kind of the loophole that they found. And so, obviously, go ahead. Sorry.
I love that he's playing golf with the chalices from the church.
Yeah.
To hold the ball.
So this whole scene is like, he's like not even entertaining for a second that he's going to cancel this rededication ceremony. And so they're all kind of dejected. They go to a bar and we find out that Silent Bob stole one of his clubs, golf clubs.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and so Azrael shows up at the bar and is just going to hold the entire group hostage until Loki and Bartleby are able to walk through the arches. And Azrael is doing this just because he's holding a grudge. He's pissed off at God and he's pissed off at Lucifer. And so
we find out this motherfucker is one of those people who waits on the fence. So there was like a war when the whole, you know, when Lucifer or Morningstar was trying to wage a war in heaven. And so instead of taking the side of God or taking a side, he just waited by and by. But I do like God saying, you know what? Everybody who was against me is out. And everybody who was silent and was trying to wait on the fence, they also out. And he ends up getting sent to hell. And he's like, it's just not for me, baby. It's just not for me. It's too hot in this bitch. Okay.
That's why he needs central AC.
But I love that even with the angels, like nobody thinks, let me try to do good. Yeah. Let me show God that I've changed so that I can try to get back to heaven. They just cry and whine like babies and do nefarious things.
Yeah.
Learn nothing.
Nothing. So obviously the group tries to fight back, but Azrael uses his angel powers and is kind of like, and the hockey triplets to prevent them from fighting back. So now we get.
Isn't he a muse though? I don't think he's an angel. I think he's a muse.
I think he's a muse too. I think you're right. So you know that trend on TikTok where it's like, what is a really obscure line that you use all the time and no one ever knows what you're talking about?
Yeah.
So Johnny and I always do the, oh, I just have something in my eye all the time. I don't know why we chose that line out of this entire movie or why we still say it, because there's no use case for it ever. But it's always just, oh, I just had something in my eye. So we get that line as Serendipity is trying to like silently indicate to Silent Bob to use the driver that he stole from Cardinal Glick on Azrael. Azrael's like, go for it, buddy. Like, you're not going to hurt me. Oh, well, he was too cocky. So Silent Bob hits him. His chest turns into black goo because Cardinal Glick has blessed his clubs.
Of course he has.
So it's an instrument of God. Yes.
And that's when they tell Bethany to bless the sinks at the bar.
Yep.
So that they could take care of the Teenage Mutant Ninja hockey player. I'm gonna make that stick. And so they stick their heads in there and they dissolve. It's real creepy stuff. So they've taken care of business. Now they got to go take care of business and get rid of them angels.
Yeah. So they show back up at, they show back up at the church. Loki is wasted. His wings have been cut off. He is mortal. He's like, he's remorseful. And he's like, Bartleby snapped. He's he's throwing people from the sky, just dropping people from the sky to kill him now. Like, I'm supposed to be the angel of death, but homeboy up there is going through a life crisis.
Well, he's like, it's all that repression, man. I've been telling him all these years, just watching. So yeah, it's not. Yeah, he's not locked great. It. Not a good time. Not at all.
But Loki confirms they have not walked through the arches yet.
Right.
So Loki is now just a human because his wings have been cut off. Bartleby is still an angel. And they're what the plan is death by cop. They're going right. to go through the arches. Sins have been wiped clean. Bartleby is going to lose his wings to become human. And then when the cops show up, there's so much wrath and carnage that they're just going to open fire. Kill the angels.
I know they were mad because at one point, okay, just to like quickly run through this, mm-hmm. Bethany, it finally clicks in her head, and there's a funny part we'll loop back to, but she realizes that if God is incapacitated and he likes skee ball, she's putting those news stories she keeps seeing about the man in the hospital, and she takes Silent Bob with her to go mm-hmm. get him. And when this happens, she's telling the other three that they need to like stall and mm-hmm. keep them from going into the church. Everyone gets mad at Jay for using a gun to cut off clip Bartleby's wings.
Yeah.
But honestly, all he had to do was not only clip his wings to make him human, but just double shoot tap him. It.
Yeah.
Right. Because they don't walk through the arches. If they could have just killed both of them and it would have been over.
Yep.
So I just never understood why they got so mad at Jay for that, because that is their weakness, essentially, is that they are in human form at this point, yeah. and they have not walked through the arches yet.
I agree. That's always been kind of like a hole.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, just kill them now.
Right. Just kill them now.
Like, they're not going to have their superhuman strength, right? Anymore. So just stand in front of the door or blockade it in some way where they can't get in, and yeah. then just wait it out.
The part that I was saying that we missed out was Jay literally. So Bethany is having a crisis. She's trying to think through it. Jay is getting his clothes off because he's like, this end. And you told me it had to be like life ending circumstances for you to sleep with me. And I don't know why, but when I rewatched it, I laughed so hard at that part.
He's just like getting busy. I'm like, bro, like you're about, how horny are you that you can get it up when it's about to be the apocalypse? Like
you know what? You remember how in the Avengers movie, the Hulk was like, the secret is I'm always angry. Well, for Jay, it's literally, I'm always horny. That is the secret. It never ends. So Bethany goes to the hospital. She pulls the plug. God is now teleported back to the church.
The church. Yeah, well, because I guess God can show up wherever she damn well pleases. Right. But at the same time, because God's voice or whatever is so big, it like the light that comes out of John Doe jersey shoots Bethany in the side. And now Silent Bob brings her back to the church, yeah. and she is dead.
Rest in peace, girl.
And as that is happening, God comes out of the church. Bartleby is like, aw, I done fucked up. Oh, prior to this, he kills Loki.
Like, yeah, Bartleby, like, how are you going to kill your best friend like that?
I know.
Right?
Yeah. And so God comes out and Bartleby's like, fuck. And so Metatron's like, anyone who is human would do well to cover their ears right now. And so Serendipity and Rufus grab Jay's head and like cover his ears for him because he's so confused.
He doesn't know who's this broad, who's this chick, like, and why are y'all bowing to her? Like, what is happening? Because even Bartleby bows to her.
Yes. And so the reaction, this is my favorite piece of acting in the whole movie, where Jay is just like, who the fuck is this broad? Why the fuck did y'all hug my head? Like, he's just yelling. He's so confused. What the fuck happened to that guy's head? He's just very overstimulated at the moment. And this is when Silent Bob walks up with Bethany, who's dead. And so it is explained, this is God. Meet Alanis Morissette. Mm-hmm. And she can fix Bethany. So she does a little hand hover over stuff, brings Bethany back to life, and also at the same time impregnates Bethany so that the lineage can carry on. And yes, then she cleans up all the carnage. There are no more dead bodies anywhere.
But this is where I'm confused.
Okay.
Yes, she's the last scion. And yes, like, it would be one thing if she just healed her womb, but essentially, is that not another kind of Jesus situation?
Yes. Because the Metatron literally says, like, he's informing Bethany that she's now pregnant, and he says, like, take care of her. She has a world of work ahead of her. So it's like the second coming of Jesus is now in Bethany's womb.
I love how Jay's like, yo, I thought he was going to say, like, it's not mine. We didn't even fuck. But instead he says, we can fuck until the third trimester.
Yeah. He's going to make it work. It's fine.
They should have done a comedy after this with them.
Bethany and Silent Jay and Silent Bob.
Two weed heads and a baby. Is what it would have been called.
So Bethany does ask God, why are we here? Which she just, her nose.
No damn answer.
No answer. Rufus, Serendipity, Metatron, and and God all go back in the church to go home. I guess they can teleport from there. I don't know.
Yeah, why did they have to go in the church? I guess it just saved money for any kind of visual effects you would need to, like, see them glitter up.
Yeah.
I also love that how playful and childlike God is.
Yes.
Like, she's literally rolling around in the grass trying to do somersaults and stuff. It's quite cute.
I love that she's wearing boxers underneath her dress too. Yeah. Like, that's such a good little, because we do it. Like, we don't want to have our panties or our ass hanging out. We'd be wearing bicycle shorts or, like, Spanx or something underneath.
Yeah.
So yeah.
God knows what's up.
She does.
I don't know why she didn't make that. They make us pockets, but I'll talk to her about that another time.
And that is Dogma. We did it.
All right. So if you guys have any comments on anything we talked about on Dogma, if you have questions, you want to give a shout out, whatever, hit us up at No More Late Fees on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Twitter, YouTube, and Threads. And let's get to our present day ratings. Jackie, birthday girl.
It's still, I would buy it. I was ready to immediately rewatch it. If my DVD version had a commentary on it, I would have just immediately rewatched it with the commentary. I love this movie.
When I rewatched it, it was like a really good refresher because I hadn't watched it in so long. There are parts of this movie I could do without, but I would like to have it on DVD. And I do like movies that make me think about, especially like from a religious standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
And based mainly on two elements, the chemistry of Ben Affleck and Matt Damon,
mm-hmm.
gold. And I really thought Jay, this is my favorite performance of his out of all of the movies that he's in. When we rewatch Mallrats, I might question that, but yeah, so it's still a would buy for me, mainly because I did enjoy it. And also I'm afraid that you will murder me if this is not
an employee pick of the year.
Yeah. I just want the audience to know I'm in fear of my life right now.
So if you have any other feedback about this episode or any other episode, hit us up at our quick drop 909-601-6653. Twat us at the Twitters, hem us at the Threads. And we are also looking for feedback If you have noticed, starting with Spice World last week, we've changed it up and we have a cold open, something that we found particularly poignant or funny from within the episode. And we're putting it as a cold open to maybe capture your attention and introduce the movie that we're doing this week. So let us know if that's working, if you find it weird or whatever, or if you have another suggestion that we can do to introduce the movie prior to our intro music, and you could be featured on a future episode.
And join us next week because we're going to a Kiss concert, because it's Detroit Rock City, baby, all the way.
Can't wait to see their love gun. And as always, be kind and rewind.